You're listening to a podcast by the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the UNOG Library. The proof of any discussion subject's importance or the speaker's importance is how many people you can garner at lunchtime. And I think we're doing very well today. Thank you for coming. It is indeed a pleasure and an honor to have such a distinguished speaker, an academic and a political figure for our library talk. Library talk is, I like the understated name. It's a platform that we are developing to bring more and more interesting speakers, subjects, and partnerships for the library and for UNOG in general. And I'm very pleased that today we are meeting here as a result of our ongoing partnership with UNRIST, the United Nations Research Institute for Social Development, and my good friend and colleague Sarah Cook. And it's part of the cement is also part of the UNRIST seminar series, and we're pairing up two brands, as it were, and a very, as I said, very pleased and honored to have such a distinguished speaker. Dr. Li Yang is Vice President of the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences. Not only a professor and academician, he's also a member of the Financial and Economic Committee of the National People's Congress, and he's Vice President of the China Society of Finance and Banking and the China Society of Public Finance. And he formerly was also an expert member of the Monetary Policy Committee. So if any of you are feeling as underachievers, join the club. Dr. Li, thank you very much for being here, and I will not take up more time, and would love to hear about the legend. I've been to China many times. I don't know why it's a legend. It's a real, very important reality, China's growth. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's my pleasure to be here to share my experience and the study of China's economic growth. As you know, over the past 35 years, China has achieved extraordinary economic performance thanks to the market-oriented reforms and opening up. By the end of 2012, China became the second largest economy just after the United States. The GDP per capita also reached to 6,055 in US dollar in 2012, up from 205 US dollars in 1980. Regarding the openness, as the largest exporter and the second largest importer, China has accumulated 3.3 trillion US dollar in foreign exchange reserves, ranking top in the world. Meanwhile, China has remained the largest recipient of foreign direct investment among the developing countries for the last two decades, and most recently came to become the number five outward FDI exporting country. Nowadays, as a major driver of the global growth, the incremental contribution of China has surpassed that of the U.S. All the above phenomena can be undoubtedly summarized as China's growth miracle. As can be seen in the figures, the first from 81st to the middle of 19th century, China's share of world GDP remained about 25%, exceeding that of Western European countries. In particular, around 1820, this share rose to 33%, a record higher level over the past 2,000 years. Nevertheless, China's economy has long stagnated since then, resulting in a decline of its relative GDP size and a record low level, 4.6%. In 1950, subsequently, after the decades of drastic economic fluctuations around 1980, China started rapid economic growth, resulting in the rise of its GDP share of the world total from 5.2% in 1980 to 17.5% in 2008. As illustrated in Figure 3, from the 1978, China's GDP grew faster than that of the world total. It means that the contribution of China to the world GDP growth remains positive and tend to be increasingly important since the 1990s. For instance, in 2011, the growth rate of world economy is 2.73%, of which 0.56% is due to China. Over the past three decades, China's growth can be viewed as the most impressive, lasting, and complex in terms of institutional changes and constraint conditions in the human history of economic growth, which is generally praised by both international organizations and economists. However, it should be stressed that such miracle is by no means costless. It is highly needed to re-examine the characteristics of China's growth based on the experience of the last 30 years, and to promote the transformation of growth mode towards a well-balanced and sustainable development path. Now, let's spend some time to analyze some main factors that under the China's economic growth. China's growth can be intensively discussed about abroad and at home. We will consider the four main factors as follows. The first is gradual economic reforms. The success of China's economic growth attribute to gradualism strategy of reform. The main character of the strategy is to incrementally introduce the market institutions without drastically damaging the vested interests. In the process, the elements of the market permeate the traditional planning system through the effect of trickle-down. In 1991, the goal of economic reform has been set to establish a socialist market economic system. From that time on, overall reform have been performed, in which six field reforms of great importance. First, the fiscal reform. In the history of China, for the first time, we introduce the de facto fiscal federalism among different levels of government under the principle of expenditure revenue matching. Second, reform of financial sector. Before 1978, as the only bank in China, the People's Bank of China was play two roles at the same time. the central bank and a commercial bank. No other banks exist at that time in China. From 1978 onwards, after three waves of reform, the PBC has been turned into a sole monetary authority whose duties are to set the, and carry out monetary policy. A modern financial sector has formed, which is composed of commercial banks, policy banks, investment banks, trust and insurance companies, and so on. Meanwhile, the financial markets have been developed with the emergence of capital, monetary, foreign exchanges, and gold markets. Third, exchange rate reform. In China, exchange rates used to be significantly different under the foreign trade, financial transaction, regulated, and the black market system. This means for a long time we have four exchange rates. In 1994, China started adopting a managed floating exchange rate system after unifying the above four different rates. Fourth, a market-based macroprudential system has been established on the basis of the fiscal and the financial reform. Fifth, since the 1980s, private investment has been allowed. In the consumption goods market first, capital goods market followed, and in 1994, the financial sector began to allow the private sector in entered. The sixth, transforming the functions of the government and promoting the construction of legal system. Thanks to the above reforms, China's economy experienced impressive changes in favor of marketization. In fact, as far back as 1996, 81% of the production materials and 93% of retail sales had already been traded according to the market pricing mechanism. The following figures can show the process and the development of the markets in China. This is a marketization index. This output now will show the state sector, the share of state sector. The other side of this coin is the private sector. Yeah. The state sector is decrease faster. Yeah. The employment. Now, state sector only account for 20%. Yeah. The tax contribution, only 10% attribute to the state, only the enterprises. The investment is only 20%. Yeah. This is the first element that contribute to the China's growth. The second one is constant opening up. Another factor explaining China's growth is constant opening up, which is equally guided by the principle of gradualism. Regarding the space structure, the markets successively opening up from the special economic zone, economic and technological development zones, coast economic development zones, riparian regions, inland regions, and finally economic development, and finally, the whole China. Regarding the industrial structure, from the advantaged manufacturing industry to the less advantaged agriculture and the service industries. China's entry into the WTO in 2001 can be regarded as a milestone. From that time on, China's opened up transformed from selective policy bears to widespread and deep institutional arrangements. Since then, China has integrated into the labor division of the global market system, under which China and the rest of the world benefit from each other. This is the export structure in China. As the world factory, China's manufactured goods account for over 90% of all exported goods of the country. Moreover, the relative share of high technology goods was increasingly since the 1990s. This trend stopped, however, in recent years, indicated a less sophisticated export structure. This shows since the 1990s, China's tariff rates gradually decreased, in particular, after the entry into WTO in 2001, the rates significantly declined. From 1992 onwards, the absolute and the relative size of the FDI in words of China rose significantly. In 1991, China only attracted $4.37 billion of FDI, accounted for 1.15% of GDP. While in the next year, the two indicators increased to $11.6 billion and 2.64%, respectively. In 1993, they further jumped to $27.52 billion and 6.25%, respectively, enabling China to become the largest recipient of FDI among developing countries. In some years, such as 2003, China even overtook the U.S. and became the number one recipient among all countries. The second element that contribute to the China's growth is industrialization and urbanization. Since 1987, the major drivers of China's economic growth are the industrialization and urbanization. By changing the industrial and the special structure, both the two processes improve the allocation efficiency of the production factor in China. As to industrialization, since the 1970s onwards, China's industrialization process accelerated. This figure shows that over 1960 to 1969, on average, the industrial value added accounted for only 35.2% of China's GDP. However, this share rose to 44.5% in the 1970s, and since then remained stable. In the meantime, the share of service sector constantly increases at the expense of the decline of agricultural sector. By way of comparison, as another huge developing country, India experienced a less dramatic structure change, characterized by a relatively small industry sector and a large service and agriculture sectors. Our experience tells us that for a developing country, bigger size of industry tends to help absorb more labors and support the urbanization, and thus can be viewed as an advantage. As to urbanization, the process of urbanization is another driver of China's economic growth. Judged by the urban population's share of the total population, over the period of 1960 to 1978, it slightly increased from 16.2% to 18.6%. In 2000, however, it almost doubled and jumped to 35.9%. In particular, in 2011, it reached to 50.5%. Since 1978, the relative size of urban population tends to gain 1% each year and to accelerate from the 1990s. Nevertheless, the urbanization level in China still remains low. Over 2002 and 2011, the urban population only accounted for 43.2% of the total, slightly higher than the half of the average for the developed countries and lower than the average for the developing countries. But it is to stress that such low urbanization level also implies that China has large potential for supporting its future growth through this driver. The first factor is the higher savings and the investment. As you know, in the framework of developing economics and the theory of economic growth, the level of savings is a major determinant on long-run growth. Many international observers view higher savings as successful experience supporting China's rapid growth. Historically, during the process of industrialization, as the income grows, the saving rate tends to increase. However, China is not just following such a general trend, but appears to have much higher savings rate than those in other countries. As can be seen in this figure, the average rate of the world is slightly higher than 20%, less than half of that in China, which is the average 47.4% over the past decades and overtakes that of Singapore. The tremendous amount of savings strongly support the investment, which spurs the long-run rapid growth without triggering severe inflation. In addition, it is noteworthy that the savings rate remains generally higher than the investment rate over the reform era. This phenomenon helps explain China's accumulated trade surplus and a large amount of holding of foreign assets. Now, we turn to the sector, the future of China's growth. Regarding the future of China's growth, we could still follow the four perspectives given above. First, reform. To gain the reform dividend, We need to launch reforms in new domains. There is no doubt that the market-oriented reform constitutes the most crucial factor to support China's growth in the future. The key here is to properly deal with the relationship between government and the markets. The latter will be expected to play the fundamental role in the allocation of economic resources. Regarding the market-oriented reforms, the key is to promote the marketization of production factors, which encompass the reform in the land system, interest rate, and foreign exchange rate determinants, development of multi-level capital markets, and the integration of urban-rural markets. Regarding the government reforms, on the one hand, the government needs to reduce its intervention in the micro-level economic activities, promote deregulation and administrative decentralization. Yes, promote deregulation and administrative decentralization. Break up monopolies and improve the efficiency of functioning. On the other hand, the government should take responsibility for the non-profit public investment, education, and supply of other public goods and services. The second is opening up. In view of the TPP, TTIP, and the recent Japan-Euro trade talks, new rules of global markets are forming. It is noticed that such new rules, which to a large extent point at China, tend to establish higher barriers on the international business. The most significant barriers are the alleged market economy status and competitive neutrality. Under this external pressure, China has a positive reaction. We shall keep promoting marketization reforms, which should support the long-run growth. The third is industrialization and urbanization. Thanks to the developments over the last 3 decades, China has basically accomplished industrialization, which is not only an important driver of economic growth, but also spurs the process of urbanization. Looking ahead, China's industrialization will follow a new path characterized by green industry, information technique, intelligence, and servicization. Meanwhile, China's urbanization will focus on the coordinated urban-rural development, modernization of agriculture, and equalization of public services around the country. As to savings and investment, in the future, both the savings and investment rates seems to remain higher compared to other countries, although the former will still exceed the latter. The gap tends to be narrowed. On the one hand, China should make more effort to improve the efficiency of investment. This concern is of paramount importance given the fact that facing the tendency of population aging. The contribution of population dividends to economic growth is disappearing, and consequently, the saving tend to be reduced. On the other hand, China will balance its demand structure by boosting domestic consumption. From an international perspective, the narrowing of China's investment gap is associated with the narrowing of China's trade surplus, thereby benefiting the rebalance of the global economy. It has actually happened since 2011. After witnessing rapid growth over the last 3 decades, China's economic expansion tends to slow down from 2012. According to the macroeconomic model of the Chinese Academy of Social Sciences, the potential growth rate is in the range of 7.8% to 8.7% during 2011 to 2015, 5.7% to 6.6% during 2016 to 2020, 5.4% to 6.3% during 2021 to 2030. It is obvious that according to the slowing down scenario illustrated above, China will still maintain its leading position around the world in terms of growth. To achieve this goal, we need to keep promoting the reforms, especially properly dealing with the relationship between government and the markets. Clearly, both market-oriented reform and government reforms are of great importance. Currently, Chinese government and the scholars are studying the key steps and the domains as well as the roadmap and the planning of the reforms for the next 5 to 10 years. This task is expected to be finished by the end of this year. We believe that as the reform advances, China will witness its 4th decade of impressive economic growth of high quality. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
My English is poor.
Your English is perfect. And thank you very much for this very concise presentation of a huge, huge subject of a huge economy, and a very candid presentation, which at the same time gave us a chance to see how you did it and to also look at some of the directions in which you're going to be looking and going. I would like to give the floor to the director of the United Nations Institute for Research and Social Development. Amrist. I've said that so many times. Well, I don't know why I messed it up now. Sarah Cook is not only the director of UNRIST, she's also a scholar of China in her own right and has a very distinguished professional career. Without taking up too much time, I would like to give the floor to Sarah. After Sarah comments and makes her presentation, I hope we will have a healthy portion of our time until 2:30 for questions and answers. There'll be a floating microphone and you will be assisted. Thank you very much, Sarah. Over to you.
Well, thank you, David. And on behalf of UNRIS, let me first also welcome Professor Li and thank he and the delegation from CAS and also representatives from the Chinese mission for being here today. We're very grateful that you could take this opportunity to give this presentation, and also to thank David and the staff at the library for hosting, for co-organizing, for enabling us to use this beautiful space, and for the joining of brands in these successful talks. I think the talk is obviously, I'll make a few very brief remarks because I'm sure you all have questions. I think the talk is very timely. We've all been reading about recent events in China's credit markets and financial systems. We've also, at a point of 6 months after the new leadership, are really looking forward to seeing what these new policy directions for China's reform are going to be as we start hearing about the stronger priorities that are emerging. I think we have, at the Chinese leadership now, you can correct me if I'm wrong, among the economic decision makers, a much stronger group of technocratic sort of economics-trained leaders, which I think is going to be interesting for these directions. And of course, I think there's also a wider role for institutions like CAS and other academic and more sort of think tank-type institutions to really feed into policy and get taken seriously. So I think there's a lot of space at the moment in this current time for a lot of ideas to shape and to feed into the future policy directions. I think on reflecting on this talk, you know, not so long ago, a decade or so ago for some of us here, there was still a discussion about gradualism versus Big Bang in sort of, you know, what is the best way to liberalize? And I think what we're hearing today is the strength of a model that really has worked out how to overcome obstacles and how to take policy decisions at the right moments in the right ways and not to sort of follow any prescriptions that say this is where you want to get there quickly, but really to work through how to do this. And so I think we've heard a lot of the very strategic opening up. Maybe with hindsight it's easier to analyze it like that, but I think we've seen that the stepping stones and ways of reform that have really added to the effectiveness of China's growth legend. I think obviously the key critical questions maybe some of us are interested in are the challenges for the future. And there's a big debate out there about whether China is facing a sort of cyclical downturn and slowdown, or whether really this is a structural sort of shift, which is probably the more dominant view that I think would be reflected here. And so slower growth is an inevitable consequence to some extent. And this has implications for China and for the rest of the world. But I think, you know, one of the questions then becomes almost a more political economy and social question. Is slowing down to 7% or 6.5% a problem for China, in terms of legitimizing the role, the government and its growth policies? Does it lead to a more, can it be used to lead to a more socially equitable, inclusive development strategy, or does it actually lead to greater problems as some people are left out of the growth process? I think you've referred to the sort of source of cheap labor, which was one of the main fueling drivers of China's rapid export-oriented growth, rural-urban migration and a large surplus pool of labor. And that possibly is running out, and we now have the aging of the population. I think the other thing maybe you didn't mention so much that I think is one of the big challenges now, you implied, is the fact that rapid growth was also driven to some extent, or maybe not driven, but it was very inefficient and costly in environmental terms. It used a lot of natural resources in a very inefficient way. And this may be a real constraint, and to some people think that some of these issues are really a choke point for China's future growth. So I think these environmental and social challenges to China's sustainable growth are ones which we're, again, looking forward to hearing more about, particularly from the new leadership. I think in terms of ongoing growth, you know, you mentioned savings and China's high savings rate, which is obviously always placed as one of the key contributors to being able to maintain these rates. And I think at a recent meeting at CAS, one argument that was put forward was that, you know, This is not an aggregate income problem. We have very high savings rates in China. You have very high savings rates. Government tax revenues have also increased much higher than GDP. Household private savings have also increased much higher rates than GDP. So why hasn't consumption increased more as household incomes increase? And again, we see a very big gap between what the lowest income quintiles and the highest income quintiles are spending, which sort of suggests that maybe increasing consumption is really about a more redistributive agenda for the growth that does exist, the benefits of growth that exists. And I think it would be interesting to, you know, how does China really boost domestic consumption, and what are the implications for maintaining these levels of growth, or even having slower growth, but growth that leads to outcomes that are more sustainable socially and that deliver the development results that perhaps China's leaders want to see. And I think the other point maybe that I'd put as a set of issues to think about is what really then are the major risks in China's economy going forward. And again, I think you've pointed to some of them. I would also suggest these issues of the social inequalities, the environmental pressures. There are also things, I think, the housing market and the speculative bubble that some people talk about, the level of local government debt, which I think is something that we don't know so much about. It would be interesting to think how these kinds of risks and threats are going to be or could be dealt with in the coming years. And I think urbanization offers both the opportunity and some risks. I mean, it really is an opportunity to, I think, move towards a model of much more sustainable, low-carbon development, better public transport, better urban planning, better use of macro resources through land and other forms of planning and environmental standards. But there's also a risk that very rapid urbanization can actually happen without those benefits. And finally, I think one of the issues that you mentioned and touched on is this issue of innovation capacity and whether there are enough incentives in the system and the right environment to really help China move to solve these problems for the enterprises, for the private sector, really to have the incentives to solve these kind of problems alongside government policy. But thank you very much for, I think, a hugely informative tour of China's development process and some of the forward-looking issues. And I'm sure many people have some comments and questions that they would like more detailed information on. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sarah. Professor Lee, would you like to speak to some of the issues raised by Sarah now, or should we go to questions and answers and you can respond? Questions and answers?
Maybe I respond directly. Okay. So, my English cannot deal with such complex things. So, maybe I speak Chinese, but I assume my that this lady to help me.
Tess, okay. Could we have the microphone, please?
Okay.
We have a microphone.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Quite all right.
Thank you. Okay. Sarah提了非常多的问题。你说。
Yeah. So, thank you, Sarah. You have raised many questions.
我也许不按照你的这个
I'll try to answer your questions, but not in the order you have raised.
我想有一个基本的问题，我想从大家先讨论一下。
I want to discuss with you one very basic thing.
那就是中国现在经济的形势在经济增长速度在下降。 那么未来的前景是怎么样? 然后中央政府的态度是怎么样?
So this basic thing is that the Chinese economic growth has been slowing down, and what will be its future, and what's the reaction of the Chinese government?
那么从我在这个演讲里说到, 中国现在正在为未来的5到10年的改革制定一个总的一个战略, 那么现在的细节还不清楚。
Just now I told you that the Chinese government is making a plan for the next 5 to 10 years for its future development, and the details are not known yet.
虽然说我们是参加了这些研究，但是呢，现在还不能够给出一个 whole picture， 是吧？
Personally, we are involved in this process, but we cannot give a very complete picture.
但是有一点我可以在这里说，就是中国现在的政府充分地认识到过去我们增长方式的不平衡和不可持续的问题。
What I can see is that the current Chinese government has fully recognized what we have achieved in the past is not very sustainable.
对，不平衡。
And it's not balanced.
对，那么刚刚 Sarah 说的那些问题，就环境问题啊，这个什么这个收入分配的问题、社会问题等等呢，都属于这个不平衡和不可持续的这个总的范畴内。
Just now, Sarah mentioned some of the issues such as environment sustainability, income redistribution, and social problems. All these are manifestations of those imbalances and unsustainability.
所以，从现在中国中央政府所采取的措施，那么可以说有三个要点。第一个，并不采取非常强的刺激措施，把经济增长速度给它拉上去。
The Chinese government has adopted three measures. The first is not to stimulate too much the growth of the Chinese economy.
因为我们认识到，如果这样的话，那么会进一步的有产能过剩，进一步的这种环境污染问题。
Because if too much stimulus will give rise to further imbalance and unsustainability.
第二呢，我们在坚定不移地推进去杠杆化。
Second, we are striving for deleverage.
刚刚 Sarah 提到，在一开始就提到我们的信用这个所谓叫钱荒是吧？信用紧缩的问题，其实是我们 deleverage 的策略中的一个部分。
So what Sarah just mentioned, credit crunch is one of belongs to the
deleverage.
It belongs to this deleverage.
这个 leverage 和 deleverage 这是在美国啊、欧洲是一个比较大家都很通行的一个。术语了。
So leverage and deleverage are very popular in both US and Europe.
中国政府呢没有公开用过这个词语来说中国的金融状况，但是我们认识到，2009年我们一个非常强的一个刺激计划，事实上在中国呢提高了这个 leverage rate。
In China, this leverage and deleverage are not very popularly used by the Chinese government. But in the year 2009, we did use this to stimulate the Chinese economy.
所以，这个中国的货币供应、中国的整个的信用的扩张，事实上和那个 QE 啊是相同的。
Actually, the money supply and credit expansion in the same line with this leverage.
QE.
因
此，但是我们的问题肯定没有像美国和欧洲这么的严重，但是我们也认识到，如果任其发展，就会十分严重。所以，最近在中国发生的事情，在一定程度上是中央政府有意的一些行为。
Our problems are not that serious as that in the U.S. and in Europe, but the government has realized the seriousness, the degree of seriousness of the problems that has taken place in China.
所以我对最近的这个中国发生的事情概括就是，中国的货币当局有意识的在释放我们的这个杠杆。在释放我们这个金融中的危险。
My view is that the Chinese monetary authority is releasing this leverage intentionally.
所以，我想各位今后会看到我们不断的在这个方向上在采取措施。
And you will notice more steps in the future in China.
那么第三个值得强调的这个新政府的一些观点吧。
The third point the Chinese the new government is trying to push forward is structural adjustment.
这个结构调整，我想熟悉中国经济的人应当知道，中国已经说了十几年了。
This has been in existence in the past 10 years.
但是呢，效果非常的这个不明显。
But the result is not very obvious.
现在的中国政府认识到，主要原因是我们始终在追求的一个高速度。
Well, the Chinese government has realized the reason for this is because we have been pursuing for the high GDP.
各位恐怕注意到，习近平总书记这次和奥巴马总统在谈话的时候说到，中国如果要想让经济增长速度拉上去，是非常简单的事。
During the talks between the Chinese President Xi Jinping and American President Obama, Xi Jinping said it's very easy for China to just to have a very high growth rate.
那我们只要增加投资就可以了。
Because we just make investment.
但是，过去这十几年的经验告诉我们，投资增加了，当年的 GDP 是增长上去了，但是呢，这个产能过剩问题。 日趋严重，环境污染问题日趋严重。
But the problem is that with the high rate of investment, the economic growth has been promoted, but this has resulted in environmental degradation and in the surplus of production.
Overcapacity. 所以我们现在要咬着牙顶住。 这个让经济啊保持在7%到7.5%的这个增长速度上。
So we try to keep our growth rate at 7 to 7.5%.
这个也就是说，我们从过去接近10%的增长，要降到一个新的一个平台上。
This means we will lower our growth rate from the previous 10% to about 7%.
当然。 这样一个增长速度下降，可能对我们长期来说是有好处的，但是短期内确实造成了很多问题。
In the long run, this decrease of the growth rate will be beneficial for the country, but in the short run, it's not so.
比如说，财政收入在我们头6个月大概是增长5%几。
For instance, for tax revenue, first half year, this only.
The figure was about 5.6%.
Yeah. But in the past, the tax revenue was about over 20%.
那么这样，这个收入下来，支出仍然还很强。 刚刚这个Sarah在说到什么社会保障等等支出啊，都还必须支出。 因此呢，中国的财政赤字问题也会突出起来。
So this means the 财政
the overall result is the government deficit will increase, and this means the deficit will go up.
当然，我们这个
deficit 在中国呢，现在是非常小的。
Currently, the deficit, the figure is rather small.
但是它如果是持续数年的话，就会成为问题。
But if this goes on for years, the deficit, the total figure will be very big.
这是我们目前面临的一个总的问题。
So this is the general picture.
但是我们是非常有信心的。
We are very confident.
因为这个我们的经济的这个实体。 层面还是非常的健康，就基本面嘛。
Because the real economy is very healthy, very sound.
那么刚刚这个 Sarah 问到，这个我们如何采取措施来刺激国内消费？
Just now Sarah asked the question as to how to boost domestic consumption.
那么我们这个知道，在中国刺激国内消费，事实上是一个不只是消费问题，它涉及到很多方面。
Actually. it does not only concern about domestic consumption.
首先，这个国内消费是涉及到这个收入分配问题。
First, domestic consumption has something to do with income distribution.
在中国呢，在政府、企业和居民的这个分配格局中，居民的这个比例是比较低的。
In the income distribution between the three, the government, enterprises, and the inhabitants, the income of the inhabitants is very low.
Household.
Household. Household. 居民哈。
是比较低的。这个，所以我们想提高这个 household 的收入水平，那就要降低企业利润，要降低政府收入。这个我想各位会知道。不是一个容易的事情。
So to increase the income of household, we have to lower the benefits for the government and for the enterprises. But this is not easy.
The profit of enterprises and the revenue of government. 第二呢，就是要想使得人们更多的消费，就必须有一个非常完善的社会保障的体系。
Second, to boost domestic consumption, we need a very complete safety net, social security.
是，这个中国正在建设之中。
And China is building up such a social security.
而且呢，建设这套体系又得政府花钱。
And it takes a lot of government money to build this social security.
现在政府收入又开始下降。
But the government sees its tax revenue.Going down.
那么要想使得增加国内消费，还需要再增加要这个增加这个公共教育啊，是卫生等等方面的支出。
Third, to boost the domestic consumption, we also need to increase expenditure in the public sector, like public education.
这个我们有个长期的调查显示，中国居民愿意储蓄，也就是不愿意消费。它的第一位的原因其实是教育，然后是养老、什么医疗等等。
Well, we have surveys in China conducted showing that the Chinese people try to save money. The main purpose is for education. Second is for elderly support.
对，也就是换言之，就是如果说我们政府不能够承担教育啊、卫生的医疗的支出，中国居民会依然保持很高的储蓄率。
This means if the Chinese government does not provide more services for the public good, like public education, health care, and education, then the household will still keep save their money.
刚才又说到我们城市化中的这个环境保护啊什么等等，他这个多处提到环境保护问题。这个环境保护可以说迄今为止呢，这个。还在中国还没有确实形成一个非常系统的这个一个战略。
Sarah mentioned just now several times about the environment protection, and in China actually we do not have a very complete or systematic strategy in this aspect.
但是呢，最近有一些状况呢，使得这个我们有希望能够看到。中央政府会有一个关于环境保护环境的一个发展战略。
But some new development in China will help the government to formulate such a environment protection strategy in the near future.
这个我想大家都会看到这个报道，在从去年下半年开始，北京这个雾霾天气这个占一大部分，而且北京已经成为不易生存的一个地方了。
Since the late half of last year, there were wide coverage in the media that Beijing has become one of the least suitable places to live because of the air pollution.
所以这样一种状况就非常严肃地提出了一个问题：难道我们每年增长10%，就是为了给我们自己造成一个不可生存的环境吗？
Well, this has posed a question for us. We try to achieve a growth rate at 10%, but to live in such an unlivable area.
对， 所以这样一种严峻的局面呢，就使得中央政府非常认真地考虑这个环境保护啊，什么绿色发展的问题。
So this will help the government to rethink their strategy to develop new economy.
我们的经验显示，改革必须是在活不下去的时候才会采取。
Our experience shows that we have to resort to reform if we cannot live any longer. And we are now have come to this juncture.
对，那么这个其他我看Sarah这个，因为对中国很熟啊，你提了好多问题。但是让他们，没必要，OK，行，也许我们在其他在座的还有。
Thank you very much. Thank you. Questions, please. Over here in the center. This gentleman first, then second gentleman, and then in the back.
Thank you very much. I'm Yi Chang-yi, research coordinator of UNRISC. And I'd like to make a question about the legend part of economic growth. Legend. We are talking about the legend of economic growth in China, but we haven't talked about legend. We talked about reality, I think. In addition to the issue of credit market crunch, I think there was another news which attracted our eyes recently. I mean, that was the kind of a launch of new mobile phone by Huawei in London. And they developed the kind of a slimmest mobile phone in the world, whose thickness is just 6.18 millimeters. And they announced that they will catch up Apple and Samsung very soon. I think in your presentation, I think the growth of private sector was looked like a very much natural process in parallel with the reduction of state sector. But I think there must be some kind of industrial policy from the Chinese government part to promote private sector. And like the case of Huawei, which is now the kind of a world leader in mobile phone markets and telecommunication market, I think what kind of industrial strategy or policy Chinese government has had, you know, to promote the kind of private companies as a world leader in the world market.
这是个非常也令我们挺难回答的一个问题。It's
a difficult question.
在中国这个私营部门的发展呢，不是政策有问题，而是意识形态有问题。不是政治问题。对，我们政策上法律上都是支持私营企业发展的，但是意识形态使得这个法律啊都很难实施。那我就这么翻译。
不是政策问题哈，不是法律问题的。So in China, development the private sector is not a policy issue, it's a kind of ideological issue.
不是，不是，不是，not the legal. It's not a legal issue. It's not a policy legal, but it's
ideological.
这个到最近在海外发展，其实也是这样的问题。It's
the same for the private sector to develop overseas.
但我想呢，这个既然这个事情只是出在思想上，可能也就会比较容易解决。
If it's an ideological issue, it's easy to solve.
那么最近呢，这个我们中央政府又不断的在出了一些政策。 然后要促进这个私营企业的发展，支持私营企业到国外去发展。这个为此呢，也开了很多次的会。还是我刚刚说的那个话，就是说到了这个过不下去的时候，这个政策就会真正的实施。那我还就说，就是我们出了一些政策，支持那个私营企业到国外。
The Chinese government has adopted new measures to encourage and to support the private enterprises to develop overseas.
但必须有压力情况下才能够真正实施。
But these policies or these measures will become very effective if they have pressures.
现在我们很高兴外面给了我们这个 pressures.
And we're happy to see pressures from outside.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question, the gentleman in front of the gentleman who was asking the question, and then in front here. We have four questions and one in the back.
Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much, Professor, for your very interesting presentation.
Could you please present yourself for everyone?
I'm Komlev. I used to be UNCTAD staff member a long, long ago. I used to be a professor of Moscow State University. So, I have just two very short and statistical questions. The first one is, what is the share of salary in the Chinese value added or in the Chinese gross domestic product? Yeah. And the second question, what is the share of the Chinese value added in the Chinese exports? Thank you very much.
Maybe I can answer your question. I think maybe China's salary share of the GDP is about 40 to 50%. And generally in advanced economies, I think it's just about 60%. And for the value added of the export, I've no the accurate figure for that, but I think using this kind of accounting for the value added, I think China's trade surplus seems lower than the general accounting. Yeah, thank you.
Mathis Bube, Friedrich Ebert Stiftung, Geneva Office. A small observation and a question. I have observation: when you have these growth rates a bit diminishing, your absolute growth still is very, very high. It still is above average in the world and still will lead to China slowly dominating a world economy, because just simply the absolute addition, not the addition relative to the growing gross domestic product, is an important factor. So this is a message quite normal. The growth rate is slowly diminishing and doesn't explain a need for a lot of policy changes. It comes not from that. But if you talk about policy changes, to steer a process more smoothly, your very full presentation was absent in one point. There was no mentioning of labor force, no mentioning of wages, and no mentioning of social security until second round, when you just shortly mentioned this. And I think here's a very important factor, because when you have a growing economy and savings, private savings are so high, people will wonder, should the state take away this high private savings, because I should not personally support my parents, I should not personally finance my children's education, the state should organize this for me. So there's an, you know, when you go into public saving for bringing more social security, for bringing more education, you just shift from private saving to public saving, and you have to explain this socially to the people. Will the people in, earning wages in Shanghai be accepting a public system for social security?
I'm sorry, could you formulate your question?
I did it. The last was, does, it's a social question to the political process. Does the population of the relatively rich and high income earning Chinese population accept an obvious, more proactive role of the state in social security?
这个中国这些年来这个经济增长非常快，但是呢这个社会保障啊，然后社会公平啊，这些问题啊比较突出，这是一个事实。
In recent years, China has seen very rapid economic growth, but still we also see very sharp contradictions like social equity.
原因很多。
Many reasons for this.
那么从一个总的，就从政府这个层面，从整个国家这个层面呢， 这个增长至上是一个很重要的原因。
One of the major reasons that the government attaches too much importance to the high speed of the economic growth.
对，因为为了增长就是要高储蓄，储蓄就要投资，投资在增长。那么对于这个改善人们的生活啊，改善收入分配等等，就注意的不够。
So the government does not give much attention to the redistribution.
对。那么这种状况呢是现在越来越突出了，所以应当说是十年前就我们就开始提出要改变这种状况。
Some 10 years ago, the government has proposed to a change of the current situation.
那么您说到这个，我们可不可以从富人头上多抽一点税，然后去帮助穷人？我们也想这样。但是据我所知，在西方也做不到这样，那么更何况中国的这个税制啊，是支持不了。
Just now you asked whether the better off people or the people with high income they will support the government policy or they would pay more taxes. This is quite ideal, and this is not even it's not so easy to solve in the West, and the same in China.
不是，我们更严重，因为
we have more serious.
因为在这个政府的公共政策，只有所得税是可以有这种功能的。所说的一方面的一方面所得税，对，一方面是这个转移支付。我们现在转移支付可以做了一些事情，但所得税，中国的所得税就占比，只是我们总收入的15%，很低的。
We have two ways. One is the income tax. This is about 10%. The other is the transfer of payment.
你说的太少了。对，你要想这个做到这一点呢，一方面就要有一个很完善的这个个人所得税的制累进的个人所得税制度，但是中国呢，个人所得税制度是非常不发达的。
In China, the income tax income taxation system is not very developed in China.
对，我们这个所得税到现在也就是占整个收入15%。
So the income tax only accounted about 15% of the total revenue.
那么做支出这边呢，我们也想办法在这个要有一些这个安排，对吧？那么但是现在呢，因为这个我们这个人口很大，这个规模很大，另外这个有这个大量的农村人口，所以呢，这个我们现在只能保障最低生活，就是那样一种这个均贫富的一种大规模的转移支付，我们还做不到。
Now it's very difficult to realize the transfer of payment. In China, the population is very big, especially we have a large number of rural population. And currently, it's very difficult to realize the redistribution among all the residents.
另外呢，就是中国政府这种，就在中国这个财富分配的不均啊，还与这个就是大家有各种原因啊，使得在财富占有上面就非常的不公平。那么对于这种状况，我们看到了，但是也没有办法，目前也还没有有效的办法来解决。就财富分配上面，
我知道，我就在想了怎么来说这个，好哈，In China, still there are very serious problem with the income distribution or income distribution. The first
income, but the wealth distribution
of wealth, and we have not many very efficient ways to cope with such a kind of unbalanced distribution of wealth.
据我所知，我们想解决这个问题。
As far as I know, we want to solve this problem.
作为解决的问题，第一步是财产登记。
The first step to solve this problem is to register the wealth.
我们要知道谁拥有怎样一些财富。
And we want to know who owns what.
所以现在你们说的这些事情都是没有准确的统计支持的。
What you have said it cannot be supported by any statistics.
所以我们先有一个准确的统计，然后才能知道我们给谁富谁穷，然后我们怎么采取措施。
So after we have a complete statistics, we'll know who are rich and who are poor.
那么做这种事呢，首先要得官员带头。
And but usually should be the officials who take the lead.
特别是高级的这种官员。
Especially high-ranking officials.
这又涉及到政治问题。
And this is a political.
但是我知道，尽管很复杂，但是我们在做。
Although it's complicated, but we're still doing it.
今年我们新政府成立，李克强总理在记者招待会上就宣布了两件事情。
When the new government came in power early this year, the new premier 李克强 he mentioned 2 points.
一件事，在明年六月，全中国的 real estate 登记。
The first is that by next June next year, the real estate there will be a complete registration of real estates.
第二呢，明年是个人所得税税号、身份证号、社会保障号、存款实名制，用一个统一的一个户头。Unified。
Unified 也是明年
啊，明年对。
So also by next year, there will be a unified number for each person, including his ID, his saving account,
tax
number,
and so on,
and social security number.
那么这个。我当时我是这个人大代表，当时记者采访我说最值得关注的是这个事情，其他其实都不重要。
I was a deputy to the National People's Congress, and when I was interviewed by journalists, I said this was the most important issue.
但是他没有被特别关注啊，对呀。
但没有被关注哈。
对，记者不懂。
Thank you very much, Professor Lee.
My name is Charles Gore. I was the former head of research on Africa and least developed countries in UNCTAD. I'm now an honorary professor of economics at the University of Glasgow. I have two very short questions, which are banal. Is there any book in English which explains as clearly as you have the inside process of China's miracle? And the second one is, in planning for the future, do you have theorists who inform what you do? Are there any special theoretical perspectives, either Chinese or non-Chinese, which inform the decisions and the path which you're going to take? Thank you very much.
你提了一个是非常重要的问题。
Thank you for raising a very important question.
我这个这些年来中国经济在发展，但是呢，这个是我们发现世界对中国的这种不理解啊在增加。
China has been developing very fast in the past years, but the misunderstanding of China from the outside world is also increasing.
从中国这个角度来说呢，我们有责任，就是我们没有这个。把我们自己做的事情用世界上通用的语言这个来展示。
Well, we should take this responsibility. We should try to explain to the outside world what's going on in China in a language that's understandable by the outside world.
对，我们总喜欢强调中国特色，你说中国特色嘛，不就是别人听不懂。
We always try to emphasize the Chinese characteristics, but this seems difficult for others to understand.
我们已经认识到这是一个很大的问题。
And we have realized this is a problem for us.
那么任何一个国家，他的做的任何的事情，总是他有共同的方面，所以我们要用这个大家所理解的这个 theoretical framework and language to express ourselves. 那么这个前不久我们在北京开一个关于智库的会，Sarah也去参加了。我做总结的时候，我就说到第一件事情，我们这个我们会议的第一个收获就是我们需要加强理解。
Not long ago, our academy organized a conference in which Sarah was invited to participate. At the concluding session, I said the first thing we have achieved through this meeting was that to increase mutual understanding.
为了这个做到这件呢，我们中国社科院在目前的推有很多的项目正在展开。
To promote such mutual understanding, our academy has been doing many, or have been conducting many research programs.
今天中午跟 Sarah 我们就提到，我在前天，我在刚从离开北京之前，我在我们的中国社会科学出版社就确定了一个叫理解中国的一个项目，有第一批是22本书。
2 days ago, we discussed the publishing of 22 books under the general title "Understanding China." It will be published. 22. It will be all these 22 books will be published by one of our publishing houses.
这个书
in English.
In Chinese version, English version, maybe French version. Yes. 这个是我们那个 press 和这个 Michael Hill 这个 press 这个一起的 joint published this series， 我就在中间写一本，就是中国的金融发展。
I will be one of the authors of one of the books called China's Financial Development。
你说的这个问题是非常突出的，我就最后说一下，我经常会接待外国朋友到中国访问。 然后他们跟我谈了之后呢，都会觉得收获很大。但是你说的这些，我们到哪都不知道。I
have received many visitors coming to visit our academy, and many of them expressed that they were puzzled because many of the things we explained to them they didn't know, and they didn't know where to get the information.
我说呢，这个是这就是这样一个问题，所以我们今后会，我领导的中国社科院，我这些方面，我们会在这方面尽力。 像今天我这个就是很别扭，如果我要有个非常流利的英语的话，你们这个会就。
So I said, well, as one of the leaders, as one of the leaders of the academy, I'll try to improve our work in this regard. And today is an awkward example. If my English is good enough, it's easier for us to communicate with each other.
反过来说，我在最后说一句，反过来说，有时候你们看到说的流利的英语在说中国的事。
Well, on the other side, if someone speaks good English, very fluent English about China, that's not maybe the truth.
Thank you very much, Professor Lee. Thank you.
Check out our other podcasts available free on the iTunes Store. For more information, go to our website, www.unris.org. Thank you for listening.